मुखं करोति वाचालं भंगुं लंघयते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम्। ॐ शांति शांति शांति। I offer my salutations to the blissful Lord Madhava, by whose grace even the mute can become eloquent and the lame can cross over mountains. May he bestow his grace upon us all, always. Om peace. Peace be within us all. Peace and harmony be amongst all beings. And peace be everywhere in nature. Good morning. The topic for this morning's study is Swadharma, one's own duty. We try to understand what is Swadharma, how to determine it, how to know what is our Swadharma, and how to do it, and why we should do it. What will happen if we do it? What is the benefit of doing our Swadharma? These are three, four things we like to study as much as possible. Swadharma means, so the word Swadharma comes in the Gita several times, 5-6 times. Twice it is Swakarma, rest of the time it is Swadharma. Both times it is simply translated as one's own duty. That is all the translation gives. It is difficult to define what is Swadharma, because it is not something fixed. If you take any one person, that person's duty changes with time. What was my duty 5 years ago is not my duty today. And what is my duty today, maybe, what will be my duty 4 or 5 days later or next month will be maybe different from what it is today. For the same person, it keeps changing with time. And at any given time, it's different for different people. Today, what is my duty is not your duty, etc. And the duty changes with time, and it changes from person to person. If a police officer uses force, reasonable force, to subdue a miscreant, then he's doing his duty. But if somebody else who is not in a law enforcement business uses force, then it is a punishable offense. Swamiji says, he defines duty in the Karma Yuga lecture. I quote, "Any action that makes us go Godward is a good action and is our duty. Any action that makes us go downward is evil and is not our duty." Then he goes on to say, "There is, however, only one idea of duty which has been universally accepted by all mankind of all ages and sects and countries, and that has been summed up in a Sanskrit aphorism thus: do not injure any being. Not injuring any being is virtue. Injuring any being is sin. Purapakara punyaya papaya parapidanam." Parapidanam means injuring any other being, not only human being, animals and plants, and even inanimate objects, in any way, by thought, word or deed, is bad or should be given up. Duty at any given time depends upon several factors which are themselves not very fixed. Some are fixed, unchangeable. Birth is one of the things. The country where a person is born, society, family, religion, economic level, environment where one grows up, is brought up, upbringing, kind of upbringing one receives. All these factors affect one's swadharma, inherited tendencies, and cultivated convictions. Inherited tendencies play a powerful part in defining one's duty. Later on, Swamiji says, our duties are determined by our deserts to a much larger extent than we are willing to grant. What we have done, what we desire to be doing now, is determined largely by our past actions, more than we think we are willing to accept. Young children show a clear tendency towards certain professions or certain actions, or aversion from towards certain professions when they are still young. Strong desire to pursue something. Sometimes it is quite different from what their parents have been doing. Inborn tendencies play a strong part, a powerful part in developing one's own convictions about what one should be doing, what one wants to do in life. Inborn tendencies are inherited from previous actions in previous births. In the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, this topic of inborn tendencies came. Mahindranath Gupta, M., the author, in the beginning didn't have much faith in inborn tendencies. But in a conversation, he gradually came to believe, yeah, they do play a powerful part in shaping our life. How is one's duty defined? Duties of four classes of society, as they obtained in the earlier times, are defined in the Bhagavad Gita. The four society was divided into four neat classes, and each class had a set of defined duties. It was all very clear. But society no longer, society has become far more complicated, complex today than it was several centuries ago. Many years ago, when I was in high school, I was reading Dale Carnegie's book. And there, I remember one thing. Dale Carnegie said, in the United States, people were worrying about jobs, what to do, writing about that. He said, in the United States, at that time, in the 1940s or 50s, there were 20,000 different ways to make a living. Some of them have gone out of fashion, and many more new professions have come. So many different ways of making a living. It is becoming more complex these days. And people do change their duties much more freely, easily, than they could in the earlier times. In the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna lists duties of the four major classes of society: Brahmanas, the priest class; Vaishyas, the trading community; Kshatriyas, the defense people, warriors; and Vaishyas, the trading people, doing trade and commerce and agriculture; and Shudras, the service community. In the 18th chapter, Sri Krishna lists, gives a list of 9 different things that a Brahmana should be doing. They are cultivation of inner tranquility, control of external sense organs, austerities of the body, speech and mind, purity both internal and external, forgiveness, straightforwardness, simplicity, knowledge of scriptures, wisdom, conviction of the existence of God, or a spiritual aspect of life. None of these 9 things are marketable. If supposing somebody has strong conviction about the existence of God and the control of sense organs and remains tranquil, nobody gets paid to do these things. These are virtues rather than duties, marketable kind of work. But how are they being supported? They were doing all these things. They were leading a Vedic style lifestyle, maintaining fire, and they were doing some teaching, running Gurukulas or schools in their homes. And also sometimes, often, kings used to support the Brahmanas. Kings used to give them some subsidy, some kind of salary for pursuing an altar scholarship. and kings used to provide some housing facilities also. Recently also it was like that in some of the princely states. So there are 9 different things listed for a Brahmana. These are all his Swadharma. For Kshatriyas, there were fewer duties, 7 duties. These were a display of heroism, shauryam, boldness, fortitude, perseverance, not becoming depressed in difficult circumstances, especially in warfare, efficiency in action, not retreating in war, not fleeing from enemies, charity, generosity, and leadership, taking charge of situation, leading a country, etc. 7 different things. Brahmanas had 9 duties and Kshatriyas had 7. For the Vaishya community, the trading community, only 3 things were listed. Krishi Gauraksha Vanijyam, agriculture, cattle rearing, and trade and commerce. And for the 4th category, Shudras, Paricharyatmakam Karma, only 1 duty, engaging in some service activity, many different kinds of services society needs, and engaging in one of those service activities, that was their duty. And this division into 4 categories at that time was more or less hereditary. A Brahmana son would pursue the life of a Vedic lifestyle, and a son of a trading person, Vaishya, would pursue the trade, etc. But that is no longer the case. Society has become far more complicated, and there are far more ways of making a living. The society is not so neatly divided into 4 categories anymore. Modern society is extremely complex. People have far more freedom, far more opportunities, and so much mobility among professions. So it is that old model does not hold good anymore. And caste divisions are not, even in Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says swabhavajam. Every time he describes a duty of a class, he says swabhavajam. Swabhavajam is defined largely by inherited tendency. Swabhava means one's own nature, inherent nature, inherited nature. And there is no high or low in regard to work. All work is essential for the total well-being of a society. If you take any organization, a corporation, then the corporation needs for efficient functioning people at all levels of the hierarchy. They need only one president. No matter how big the company is, there is only one CEO or one president. But there are many other workers at different levels. They're all needed. Everybody is needed. Everybody's service is essential for the proper functioning of the whole organization. Same thing about society. In a company, there is only one president or CEO, but many people function at different levels. A company needs technicians, production workers, office workers, managers, janitors, salespeople, executives, and so on. Everybody is needed. Nobody's service is dispensable, otherwise the company would not keep. So likewise in the society, people of all categories, all levels are needed for the proper healthy functioning of the society. A person is therefore not to be judged by what kind of work a person does, but rather on how a person does the work. Swamiji explains it in his Karma Yoga book. I read a passage from Karma Yoga. He who does the lower work is not therefore a lower man. No man is to be judged by the mere nature of his duties, but all should be judged by the manner and the spirit in which they perform them. Elsewhere in Karma Yoga lectures, he gives an illustration. Supposing there is a janitor. He does his work very sincerely, joyfully, and does it very efficiently. And there is a professor who just doesn't function properly, says something, and doesn't do his work properly. Who is better? The judge, one should not judge a person by the kind of work one does, But the manner in which one does the work, one should do the work properly, joyfully, cheerfully, gratefully, and we'll see why we should be grateful to be able to do the work. And in the spirit of service, giving and offering, then that person's work is superior. The second question we want to understand, study, is how to do our duty. This is easier to understand. Swami Vivekananda says, doing the duty which is ours at any particular time is the best thing we can do in this world. Why we should do the duty? There is no choice. We, in the Gita, a couple of times Sri Krishna says, even for a short moment, it is not possible for somebody to sit down without doing any work. Supposing I say, I don't want to do any work today. I don't want to make breakfast. Let them do themselves. I will sit in my room. So I will lie down on my bed. I don't get up. And then how long can I be lying down there? If not for others, at least I should get up. I become hungry. I should go to the kitchen and find something to eat. So I am already engaged in so much activity. It is not possible. It's physically impossible to not do anything for any length of time. If body, even if the body is inactive, the mind will be thinking so many thoughts. I'm not doing any work. If I'm saying I'm not going to do any work, that thought itself is activity. I'm already acting. So it is not possible to remain without doing our duty, our any kind of work. That is one thing. The second thing is our nature drives us to work. In the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna, when Arjuna says, I don't want to fight. And Sri Krishna says, in effect, he says, Prakrsitvam Nyakshasi, if you don't want to fight, your very bones will make you work. Your nature is like that. You are a Kshatriya, you will be fighting, whether you like it or not, whether you want it or not, it's going to happen. Our tendencies drive us to work. It's a necessity. Work is both a physiological and psychological imperative, necessity. A person cannot be healthy if he is totally inactive. First of all, it is not possible to be totally inactive. And secondly, even if a person remains inactive, that's not good for his mental or physical health. So work is an imperative. Work is necessary. Bhagavad Gita gives several instructions on how to do our duty. It says, in the Gita, whatever you do, Sri Krishna says in the Gita, whatever you do, do it as an offering to me. He gives several examples. All actions that we do, barring improper actions, immoral actions, which you should not be doing in any case, we should offer all our work as an offering to the divine or to a larger cause. The second thing that we can do, Sri Krishna says we should do, is to do all work as worship. Do it with love. We should do our work with love, with devotion, keeping aside our likes and dislikes. In the 18th chapter, Sri Krishna says, a yogi is one who keeps aside his likes and dislikes and does what is needed to be done. If a job is very attractive, agreeable, brings fame and visibility and rewards, one should not become attached to that. If some work is disagreeable, difficult to do, nobody else wants to do it, I also should not reject it. If it is my job, I should do it with joy, with love, with gratitude. And all work must be done with devotion, because all work is to be offered as worship of the divine. A good example of this, which has come up many times, is how Brother Lawrence did the work in the monastery. Brother Lawrence was not a very highly qualified person, and he was living in the 17th century. He was born in 1611, passed away in 1691. He lived for 80 years. He was in the army, French army, and when he became injured. A leg was injured and he could not function properly, so he was discharged from the army, and he was just roaming here and there, looking for something to do. And one thing led to another, and he joined a Carmelite monastery. And there, he being a novice, they gave him the work of cooking and cleaning in the kitchen. He was put to work in the kitchen, monastery kitchen. There's a lot of work to do. You know, remember in 17th century, the kitchens were not like our kitchens today. There was no electricity, there was no hot water, there was no any kind of appliance or machine. Everything had to be done manually, cold water. But he didn't mind. There was a lot of work to be done. Many other monks had to be fed. Patiently, he would cook and clean and serve with great joy. And he didn't. He was not a scholar. He didn't write any book or anything. Nor did he give any lectures or talks. He wrote some letters to other monastic members. 16 of his letters have been recovered. And in one letter, he says, doing the work as offering to God. He didn't have probably much time to go to the chapel and participate in the offices several times a day, monks do. But he was working in the kitchen. But that was his worship. Whatever work he did in the kitchen, he did it as worship with great joy, with great devotion, offering everything to God as his worship. And in one letter he says, doing the work, cooking in the kitchen for other monks gave him so much joy that he could barely contain the joy. He writes there that when he was making the cakes, maybe he was making pancakes or something for monks, in between he would prostrate himself on the ground, lay down on the ground, prostrating to the Lord, thanking him. Oh, thank you, please accept this, this is my offering, this is my worship. With that attitude of devotion and gratitude, we have to work. Work is a privilege. Usually, sometimes people complain, why am I stuck with this work? Let somebody else do it. This is not a very agreeable kind of work. I don't like to do it like this. But we have to work joyfully and with gratitude. Why gratitude? Work is a privilege and an opportunity for spiritual growth. Supposing a person is deprived of opportunity to work. He has ability but not opportunity to work. That person becomes unhappy, hankering for a job. Supposing a person has opportunities but has been deprived of ability, cannot do any work. That person becomes miserable. Everybody is up and doing things, and I am sitting there unable to do anything. That person won't be happy. The sheer fact that we are able to do something and there is something for us to do itself is a privilege. It's an opportunity for spiritual growth. It's an opportunity for worship. It's a divine offering to the divine worship. So work, if somebody has work to do and has reasonable ability to do it, then that person should be grateful for that opportunity. If either of these things is taken from us, opportunity and the ability to work, then we won't be happy. That we have both of these itself is a blessing. So when I have to do something, I should do it joyfully, gratefully, thanking the Lord. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to serve you in this way, to worship you in this way. All work is worship. Then, when I was preparing for this talk, I was reminded of a hymn that Shankaracharya wrote. He says, the concluding line of the hymn is, Yadyat karma karomi tat tadakhilam shambho tavaradhanam Atmatvam girijamati sahachara pranashariram griham Pujate vishayopabhogarachana nidra samadhisthitihi Sanchara padayo pradakshina vidhihi Stotrani sarvagiro Yadyat karma karomi tat tadakhilam shambho tavaradhanam. O Lord Shambho, whatever work I do is all my worship, worship of you. I'm worshipping you through all my work. Every time I take a step, I'm circumambulating. When I go from this room to that room, I'm circumambulating the divine. Every time you say something, it is your glory. I'm speaking about your glory. Like this one. So with that spirit of worship and gratitude, with great joy, we have to do our work. Then it becomes worship. It should be offered to the divine. Then it's spiritual practice. Now the last point that we have to study is what is the benefit of doing Swadharma? Why can't we just do the minimum and be done with it? In the Bhagavad Gita, Sri Krishna says that performance of one's duties in the proper spirit, in the spirit of service or offering, leads to spiritual illumination. Several places in the Gita, Sri Krishna says that if we do all our work as offering to the divine, as worship of the divine, that leads us to perfection. Perfection is defined by Shankara in a couple of different ways. In one place he says, perfection means param moksham apnoti purushah sattva shuddhi dvarena ityarthaha. If you do your duties properly in the proper spirit, it leads to purification of the mind. It takes away the impurities of our mind, such as lust, anger, greed, pride, etc. Makes the mind pure. Purity of mind is only one step away from illumination. Sattva shuddhi dvarena ityarthaha. Another place Sri Krishna defines siddhi or perfection as purity of mind, which makes one capable of inquiring into the nature of reality. Anyway, doing your duties as worship, as offering, joyfully, gratefully, leads us to purity of mind, and purity of mind leads us to illumination, spiritual illumination. Therefore, emphasis is on doing our duties properly in the proper spirit. When rightly pursued, Shankara writes in his commentary on one of these verses, when rightly pursued, the natural result of performing these duties enjoined for the various classes is attainment of heaven and rebirth in a good family, paving the way for further spiritual practices leading to spiritual illumination. So that is the benefit of doing the work properly. Now, by doing our work properly and without having the ability or opportunity to do any other kind of spiritual practice, such as meditation or japa or intense spiritual practices that some people can do, itself can lead one to the ultimate illumination. To illustrate this, Swami Vivekananda narrates a story from the Mahabharata. In the Mahabharata, there is a big story called Vyadha Gita. It's a very detailed story. Swamiji gives a very highly abbreviated version of that story, and I'm going to read part of that story that Swamiji narrates in his own words from this Karma Yoga book. A young sannyasin went to a forest. There he meditated, worshipped, and practiced yoga for a long time. After years of hard work and practice, he was one day sitting under a tree when some dry leaves fell upon his head. He looked up and saw a crow and a crane fighting on the top of the tree, which made him very angry. He said, "What, dare you throw these dry leaves upon my head?" As with these words he angrily glanced at them, a flash of fire went out of his head, such was the yogi's power, and burnt the birds to ashes. He was very glad, almost overjoyed at this development of power. He could burn the crow and the crane by a mere look. After a time, he had to go to the town to beg his bread. He went, stood at a door, and said, "Mother, give me food." A voice came from inside the house. "Wait a little, my son." The young man thought, "You wretched woman, how dare you make me wait? You don't know my power yet." While he was thinking thus, the voice came again. "Boy, don't be thinking too much of yourself. Here is neither crow nor crane." He was astonished. Still he had to wait. At last a woman came, and he fell at her feet and said, "Mother, how did you know that?" She said, "My boy, I do not know your yoga or your practices. I'm a common everyday woman. I made you wait because my husband was ill and I was nursing him. All my life I have struggled to do my duty. When I was unmarried, I did my duty to my parents. Now that I am married, I do my duty to my husband. That is all the yoga I practice. But by doing my duty, I have become illumined. Thus, I could read your thoughts and know what you had done in the forest. If you want to know something higher than this, go to the market of such and such a town where you will find a Vyadha who will tell you something that you will be very glad to learn. Vyadha means the lowest class of people in India who used to live as hunters and butchers, meat cutting, meat selling business people, Vyadha, who will tell you something that you will be very glad to learn. The sannyasin thought, why should I go to that town and to a Vyadha? But after what he had seen, his mind opened a little, so he went. When he came near the town, he found that market, and there saw at a distance a big fat Vyadha cutting meat with big knives, talking and bargaining with different people. The young man said, Lord help me, is this the man from whom I am going to learn? He is the incarnation of demon, if he is anything. In the meantime, this man looked up and said, Oh, Swami, did that lady send you here? Take a seat until I have done my business. The sannyasin thought, what comes to me here? He took his seat. The man went on with his work, and after he had finished, he took his money and said to the sannyasin, come, sir, come to my home. On reaching home, the Vyadha gave him a seat, saying, wait here, and went into the house. He then washed his old father and mother, fed them, and did all he could to please them, after which he came to the sannyasin and said, now, sir, you have come here to see me. What can I do for you? The sannyasin asked him a few questions about the soul and about God, and the Vyadha gave him a lecture which forms a part of the Mahabharata called the Vyadha Gita. It contains one of the highest flights of the Vedanta. When the Vyadha finished his teaching, the sannyasin felt astonished. He said, why are you in that body? With such knowledge as yours, why are you in a Vyadha's body and doing such filthy, ugly work? My son, replied the Vyadha, no duty is ugly, no duty is impure. My birth placed me in these circumstances and environments. In my boyhood, I learned the trade. I am unattached and I try to do my duty well. I try to do my duty as a householder and I try to do all I can to make my father and mother happy. I neither know your yoga, nor have I become a sannyasin, nor did I go out of the world into a forest. Nevertheless, all that you have heard and seen has come to me through the unattached doing of the duty which belongs to my position. That was the Vyadha's teaching. Gist of the teaching is much more detailed in the Mahabharata, but this is the gist. Then Swamiji says, there is a sage in India, a great yogi, one of the most wonderful men I have ever seen in my life. He is a peculiar man. He will not teach anyone. If you ask him a question, he will not answer. It is too much for him to take up the position of a teacher. He will not do it. If you ask a question and wait for some days, in the course of conversation, he will bring up the subject and wonderful light will he throw on it. He told me once the secret of work, quote, let the end and the means be joined into one. When you are doing any work, do not think of anything beyond. Do it as worship, as the highest worship, and devote your whole life to it for the time being. Thus, in the story, Vyadha and the woman did their duty with cheerfulness and wholeheartedness, and the result was that they became illuminated, clearly showing that the right performance of the duties of any station in life, without attachment to results, leads us to the highest realization of the perfection of the soul. It is the worker who is attached to results that grumbles about the nature of the duty which has fallen to his lot. To the unattached worker, all duties are equally good, and form efficient instruments with which selfishness and sensuality may be killed and the freedom of the soul secured. We are all apt to think too highly of ourselves. Our duties are determined by our deserts to a much larger extent than we are willing to grant. So this story clearly illustrates how we have been trying to understand that merely by performing our duty that comes to our lot, by for whatever reason, we may call it inherent tendency or opportunity, or we chose it, or it comes to us, or whatever, whatever way, we have to do some work today, whatever work we have to do today. If we just do it joyfully, cheerfully, thankfully, and without worrying too much about the success or failure, as enjoined in the Bhagavad Gita several times, and offer it to the divine as our humble offering, do it as worship, that will eventually lead us to the ultimate illumination.